I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome back to Old Millennials, a deep dive on shallow topics from the 90s and 2000s. I am one of your hosts, Emily Bajin.
And I am your other host, Marco Poupard.
Once upon a time, in a faraway land known as Stars Hollow, Connecticut, a mother and daughter navigated the trials and tribulations of small town life. Today, we get to talk about a show that seems to come back on everybody's radar about like September 21st, just because it is like peak fall goals. And that show is Gilmore Girls. And here to join us is the amazing Meredith Lynch. Meredith is a content creator, a TikTok star, just someone whose content I always enjoy, and hot takes on pop culture I seem to come back for all the time. So welcome, Meredith. We are so happy to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. And I, too, am an old millennial, so this is the perfect place for me to be. I feel like I'm with my people.
You're safe. You're home. You can just relax. You don't have to pretend that you care about using the word Riz in casual conversation. Like, we are one.
We are one.
I love it.
We have soft pants. We have face masks. It's a really safe space.
Guess what I have on? I have on not high-rise jeans.
Oh, wow.
She's taking a risk. She's taking a risk.
I kind of love them. They're so much more comfortable.
Oh, this is – you know what's funny, Meredith? After – right before we got on this pod – I put on jeans and I realized I'd been wearing more mid-rise recently because they felt very high. I was like, are these my highest waisted ones? Like, why do they feel so weird? And it was like the recent shift to a bit more mid-rise. Like, it's a, I don't know. It's like, I kind of love a high rise, but the mid-rise, I can roll with it. I can roll with it.
I will say the high rise is definitely a little more flattering on me, but the mid-rise is a little, we're going for comfort.
Oh, yeah.
And don't you feel like Lorelai, that she was a mid-rise girl?
Oh, 100%.
And a rise.
And a boot cut. She didn't meet a boot cut she didn't love and wanted to wear immediately. I mean, honestly, I had not rewatched the pilot in a really long time. And I was sort of taken aback by how tight her uniform at work is. I was like, is this Hooters or is this a B&B? Like, what are we doing? It is so tight. How is she supposed to like move around and like check people in if she's got to like keep her arms to her side a majority of the time? Because it's like this little tiny tight skirt, like pencil skirt at like an awkward like mid knee length. Like, remember that length from 2001 that like didn't look good on anybody? But I was really surprised at how tight her little blazer was. So the whole thing just kind of made me giggle.
Yeah, I feel like they probably were like, Okay, we know how a kid would dress at a ritzy private school, but we don't really know how like a working class mom would dress running the front desk at a moderately priced bed and breakfast. So like, let's slutter up a little bit.
Let's slutter up. The other thing I noticed with this first season, and we'll get into more on the show in a second, but Lorelai Gilmore loves a quote unquote vintage cowboy related t-shirt. Like everything has a cowboy or a ranch or like an old diner. Margo and I have talked about this on the show before, but once upon a time, we really just loved fake business vintage tees.
I mean, as we noted in a Patreon episode, when we looked through all of the current clothing available for purchase on Urban Outfitters and realized that they were doing it yet again, selling shirts for like, they're like, I think we were losing our minds over like some fake flower shop that's like in San Francisco on two streets that never connect. And we're like, that's just madness. Just look at a Google, please. But they're bringing it back. And it's not even the fake business of it all. It's also the distressed of it all that,
yes,
that was so of its time.
Yeah, like a burnout tank was really big for a while, but she almost does like a burnout Willie Nelson tea. And you're like, yes. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a choice. And she'll sometimes wear the bandana on her hair, her head too. So like she gives in to like full Willie Nelson. Like she could be at Farm Aid singing with a guitar. And that basically was like, she could be a farmer in those clothes.
She really could. But she's just a, you know, casual dresser at the Stars Hollow Inn.
I guess this is a perfect place to ask you both, since we were kind of alluding to it earlier, what is both of your relationships with Gilmore Girls? Meredith, feel free to start.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of the perfect age to get into Gilmore Girls because it came out around the time of Dawson's Creek and Felicity, and it kind of came on the heels of all of those shows. And I was really into the WB, which, you know, for the kids, that was what the CW is. And so I really liked that. And so I remember watching the early seasons of it, and it is without to be like wah wah. It is the last, my mother died when I was in high school. It is the last show that I remember my mother being like, I like this show. So it always stands out to me. And she used to tell me that the relationship between Lorelai and her mother reminded her of her relationship with her mother. And since, you know, because of the trauma, and I don't really understand a lot of what happened between my mother and my grandmother, a lot of what I go off of is just things that I see in Gilmore Girls now through the eyes of an adult.
You bring up this thing where I like sometimes forget. So barring her being a scab, I was obsessed with Drew Barrymore because she reminds me a lot of my cousin. So I sometimes like think of my cousin as being Drew Barrymore. It sounds like similarly you think of the relationship between your mom and your grandmother as almost like as you're watching Emily and Lorelai, you're watching a scene that happened between them in real life.
Yeah, exactly. And so in a way, I found the show to be really comforting. And I will say I related to Lorelai a lot more because like I was a little bit of like – I was a terrible student. I was like kind of a hot mess. And I couldn't relate to Rory. I was like – you like doing your homework? Like, that's lovely, but that will never be me. And so I knew that even then. But I did feel like it was a show that was a release. There was no 9/11 in Stars Hollow.
Right. That's true. Yeah. Very true.
What about you, Margot?
I mean, Meredith, I think you and I have like a lot of crossover with our relationship with Gilmore Girls because, I mean, my mom is still with us, but it was like one of the last shows she and I like watched together, you know, because I was in high school. It was like perfect time, perfect place. It was like a nice show. It was like the last like lighthearted because, you know, then after that, the next show I can remember the two of us watching, but not together together was Mad Men, which is not the same as Gilmore Girls. But I really related a lot to like the plot of the story because I grew up with the single mom and she had to work a lot of jobs and it was always sort of like a stressor to have her to like pay my way and all of like the extracurriculars that I was really interested in. I remember that feeling of I feel like Rory didn't watch her mom work as much as I watched my mom kind of like front row seat to like how parenting a kid really feels. So in some ways Gilmore Girls felt like our little escape, but I'll never forget how disappointed I was when I found out that Lorelai came from money, because we do not come from money at all. And so me being like, oh, okay, all you have to do is like have dinner with your grandma once a week. Like, I do that all day, baby. If that meant that I could like live a little bit more comfortably, I'm like, come on. So even now it's a little bit more laughable now, but at the time I remember feeling like a little bit betrayed. But I also similarly always related way more to Lorelai, because I'm like a hot mess that like talks very quickly and speaks in pop culture that people don't understand. And I'm like addicted to coffee. And I'm always like pining over some dude that I was friends with for a long time. So I related to all of that. And my best friend Val is a lot more like Rory. She's like always been the super smart one. Always was like the one that people were like, oh, she's going places. And like, maybe you'll find an inn one day. And it's like, cool, thank you. But it's always been like a comfort watch. Like anytime I've dropped in on like a random episode, there's something about the show's like one of the reasons I wanted to become a writer. Like the way that they speak to each other, I always felt was so organic, and you could just so get lost. And like, I just want to like live in the dialogue sometimes, because it's like, it's so funny. It's so smart. It's so witty. Similarly, like the Dawson's Creek made me want to like speak in a smarter way, even if I didn't fully understand the words yet. Gilmore Girls did the same thing to me, and I think also shapes the way that I speak, even a little bit subconsciously.
No, totally.
I totally see that. Yes.
It's one of those – I'm glad you brought that up, Margot, because I think that – first off, like my relationship is I started watching around the same time, like high school when it first aired. I dropped in every once in a while, watched it pretty consistently early on. I related more to – I was kind of like a half Rory, half Lorelai. Like I wasn't the best student, but I was definitely like more innocent like Rory in that sense. And then Lorelai just because of like the witty, quick – sense of humor and just the overall like having fun and knowing these like pop culture references. But to your point, Bargo, you bring up the fact that like the WB at the time, when you guys think about it, I mean, J.J. Abrams was showrunner for Felicity. You had Kevin Williamson, who wrote the screenplay for Scream, who was a showrunner for Dawson's Creek. And then you had the Amy Sherman-Palladino over at Gilmore Girls. All of these shows were created and ran and were run by some of the biggest names in Hollywood to this day, people who are still making films, who are making shows, and have kind of carved out a very distinct voice and opinion. So for being a network that was disguised as having these teen melodramas, oftentimes these were written by some really, really talented writers who went on to do well for themselves, not to mention, I know, problematic in many ways, but Joss Whedon with Buffy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, like, you know, they probably got dumped into being like, oh, these are, like, fluffy teen dramas. And yeah. I also think, though, it was very reactionary of the time, right? Like, when Dawson's Creek started, when Felicity started, it's not all about 9/11. But, like, this is pre-9/11. And Gilmore Girls, it premieres mm-hmm. in 2000, October 2000. We're just coming off the heels of the Clinton administration. Like, there is a thriving middle class. Like the world looked very different when these shows were on, and it was totally very different, I think, to be a teen then. And mm-hmm. I was thinking a little bit about, I'd love to hear your perspective on this, would Gilmore Girls have worked if there had been like social media and texting cell phones and all that kind of stuff woven into the show?
No, because it's also, you know, Emily brought up Joss Whedon earlier. Buffy was also one of my pinnacle shows. I feel like that show also works because there are no cell phones. There is no way you can track her. She's not being recorded. Similarly, like Gilmore Girls, I feel like you're living inside of like a Hallmark movie, but it's not as like cloying and like the dialogue is better. And yes, you completely pop that bubble of illusion the second somebody pulls out a cell phone. It doesn't even matter if it's like a flip phone. The fact that Rory can just walk anywhere she wants day or night and doesn't have to worry about a single thing is part of the fantasy. And in some ways, the way that I feel about Real Housewives, where it's like, I want to see the fantasy. I don't want to see my own life. Please get it away from me. Seeing a cell phone in Gilmore Girls, I think, would completely ruin the aspirational and like almost cozy qualities of it.
I think one of the key things when it comes to Gilmore Girls' dialogue is that the witty pop culture references that are, you know, sometimes you get them, sometimes they like, you know, go past you and like But it's all done with – all those references were done because of hard work. Like, people saw the cult films. People listened to that music. It wasn't an easily accessible thing through a streaming platform or, you know, Spotify. Like, these were all, like, cult film movie nights that people, you know, saw these films. And I feel like that's such an aspect of Stars Hollow. Like, they have the small theater where Kirk's showing Eraserhead one time or, like – Lane is like always talking about these obscure bands from like the 1970s, or Jess will bring in like another obscure, like that's half of the fun, is that they are introducing one another, the characters, to these important cult classics, be it in film, TV, music, what have you. And the element of not having the internet or phones present makes it what it is, which is like so integral to the plot.
Yeah, I think it's that feeling of it's a little bit removed from reality. Like, they're just relatable enough. It's just sort of like small towny relatable enough that you could see yourself living there, but you know, it's like a completely isolated event. Like, there's no way that this would really be real, but the people feel real, so you kind of you suspend your disbelief, right? And I think that cell phones would pierce that. And I think that for the same reasons that Gilmore Girls is great because there is no social media is like why Euphoria makes a ton of sense, why it's shaped the way that is and the way that they live their lives. That's so authentic to those characters' experiences. And it's a reflection of, to Meredith's point, original point, which is like it's a reflection of the time.
Right. And I love Euphoria. I absolutely love it. And what I would say is so interesting is I was thinking about this earlier today. I think a lot of shows have tried to duplicate the whole Gilmore Girls thing. I would say there was there's that Sweet Magnolias, which I don't even know if they I don't even know if they let people film that anymore, because it's like Jamie Lynn Spears can't even leave her house.
I know. There's that. I know. Ginny and Georgia.
Yes.
Got like roasted to hell over that comment about like oppression Olympics. I remember for weeks on Twitter, you could not get away from that meme about how like ridiculous the dialogue was. So they're trying to copy it, but it because it's like the AI version of it. It's like, no wonder it comes out like gobbledygook, because you're like, you're not getting it from the source. But sorry. Yes. Ginny and Georgia, definitely one of those like tries. You can see it trying to be a cozy show.
Yeah, and I don't think that it really works. And I think that it's Amy Sherman Palladino or whatever, who's on Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, right? Mm-hmm, which, like, that show's got some flaws. Like, but I think that was the natural next step for us as viewers, given the time and the place of where we were at. It's not possible to go back and reinvent what Gilmore Girls did so well.
Totally.
Well, I mean, that's why I think like the next chapters were such a flop, you know, for lack of a better term, too, because they were trying to recapture something and live in a time that doesn't exist anymore. And it was like the more that they forced it, the more that it was like, it doesn't feel right. It's like trying to get back together with an ex after like years and years. You're like, I understand like deep down there will always be a thing here, but like it doesn't feel the same.
Kind of reminiscent to me of when Rory gets back together with Dean when she's at Yale and he leaves his wife, which like, because I was the age that I was, I didn't realize how actually really weird it was that Dean was marrying someone. Like, that was like really weird.
And engaged, like.
Like, that was weird. And then, like, at the same time, people are like, Dean, how could you cheat on your wife? Rory, how could you sleep with him? It's like, I don't know, frontal lobe development. Like, they're literally children, okay?
Exactly.
And then they get back together, and then, like, sure enough, it's like, oh, wow, I guess our lives are too different. Like, even though I'm not a Dean fan, I do kind of feel like he was, like, Rory's accessory, and it was like, well, he's not going to go to college. He's just going to keep working at the grocery store.
Yeah.
That's I think that's how he's always been introduced, is like a himbo, essentially. Mm-hmm. And he's to be seen and not heard. And I respect the show for treating a man like that, but I did feel bad for him in the end. But also, you know, it wasn't, like you said, at the same time, it's wild now to be like, wow, 18-year-olds getting married, that's a terrible idea. But because you probably had at least knew one or two people that did that immediately after high school, you're like, oh, they're just one of those people that got married almost immediately for not a religious reason. Interesting.
Very interesting. We just hit on a bunch of things that lead me into the next question I have for you all, which is like, there are some things about this show that age fairly well, and there are other things that feel pretty outdated and would not be a plot line if, well, one, we all agree Gilmore Girls would not air in 2023, but if it were to air of some variation, like, what else feels pretty outdated or just like would not exist as is?
That's a great question. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Rory's lack of respect for a public education. No, I'm just kidding. Like, you could have taken a couple of AP classes.
Like, there's definitely nothing wrong with public school, you know, and quite the opposite. Like, she had, I wouldn't say idyllic private school situation, but I'm just saying, no, that was no Euphoria High private school. Like, that, what I've heard of private school is a little bit more like raunchy than like what she was going for. So I just found her experience to maybe not be true to life, but it's true to Rory's life.
That's so true. There's just not enough drugs at this private school. Right.
Like, I know it's Connecticut, but come on.
Like, she was still dealing with it did seem though like emotional warfare to be going to that school. Like, yeah, I sure. See, how did we not have like a whole like 3 or 4 season plot line where Rory's like, I'm going back to like my small Connecticut high school or whatever. Like, you know, wouldn't she have like played with that idea at least? And then it was kind of like everybody who was lesser than Rory had to go to the public high school.
I know. This is where I feel like the character of Lane gets really shafted on the show.
Yes. And
while I love Paris and she should have been gay, that would have been my comment, by the way, of like, if this show aired in 2023, like, the Paris would have been gay. Like, let's be honest. Lane gets so shafted because she is, you know, well, back in Stars Hollow High, you know, like, and because she's not dating Rory, you can tell that there's like limited screen time and the Sherman Palladinos are kind of determining like who is going to get more airtime. And it tends to lean, especially in the college years, which makes sense, towards Paris. But yeah, I feel like everybody who's Rory's age on the Stars Hollow side of the world kind of gets shafted in plot lines. And not to say you have to go to college, that's not what I mean, but it just feels like Dean is left to be living this life that he'll continue to live. And while Lane has the band and eventually meets her husband, like, I just feel like there are times where that plot line doesn't get explored as much as it should.
No, I totally agree. I always loved Lane and always felt like she was like a C or D plot character when she really should have been in like at least the B's. Like, I thought that, you know, she was Rory's best friend. And again, in rewatching the pilot, I forgot that like Lane's mom doesn't really necessarily even like her. And I think that that's funny. And I can't believe also that we don't really have like, to go back to plot lines that we're missing, I can't believe we don't have like an anti-bullying plot line in all of Gilmore Girls for some reason. Like, there's plenty of it going around at both schools. And I'm not saying because Lizzie McGuire did it that you guys have to do it, but I'm just, you know, I'm just out here asking questions about like why it wasn't included, especially time and place. There were so many anti-bullying like PSAs going around, and then conversely, like, don't do drug ones. So how those didn't really seep in is maybe just like a testament to Amy Sherman Palladino and like her vision, because clearly she made the choices of like, oh, I don't think that Lane's that important to the plot. Like, it's really like about Lorelai and Rory. And if Rory is more focused on going to private school and meeting boys, then yeah, maybe we don't have as much of a focus on Lane because it's not about them being best friends. But kind of feel like that was a missed opportunity to not use her more.
Are there any other kind of things that we feel would not work in this show in 2023?
Well, here's what I'll say. I was thinking about this earlier. at the time, I think it felt like, oh my God, you have to ask your parents for help with money. Like, yeah, that's a big deal. And I think now, if you showed this, I mean, aside from the fact that, like, Meredith, it's a television show, it's not real life. I think if you showed this show to someone who would be like the target demographic, like 14 years old, or maybe a little younger, maybe like 12, right? If you showed them this show now, they'd be like, how did that single mom who like works at the inn that doesn't make a lot of money get that house? Like,
yes,
that was a cute house.
Yes. No, and I like, yes.
How does anyone survive without like their grandparents helping them go to private school? So I think like it was also very reactionary of the economy. It was like, oh, she has to ask her wealthy parents. And it's like, you know, she was able to bootstrap herself up. Like it's, that's not really possible.
No.
Anymore.
Yeah. I think if you showed this to somebody now who had never heard of it and didn't know anything about it, they'd just be like, oh, like she's like a Nepo baby. Like, I just feel like that would be the reaction people would have. Like, it's not that strange. And to your point, Meredith, yeah, I never even questioned why she lived in a nice house. I just thought, oh, like she must be raking it in at the inn or something, or maybe it was like left to her. But it, I mean, similarly, like a lot of sitcoms in the 90s and 2000s, like just had these enormous places too, where no one questioned why, a magazine, like an associate magazine editor can afford to live in like a brownstone. So I guess it wasn't that strange. But like I said, the reveal of her parents being rich was just like, I feel misled.
What do you think doesn't work? Like, what are your things?
For me, wouldn't work? I mean, I think I mentioned it earlier, which is like Paris and I would say Michelle as well. I mean, they fixed this in the revival where Michelle alludes to has a husband and all this. But there were several characters who were coded gay on this show, but never outright in the original airing. And part of that is because of the times, like that just you just didn't have that many LGBTQ characters unless the show was focal point was about LGBTQ characters. And usually it wasn't network TV. And I think the other thing is just the overall cast and kind of lack of diversity. You have a few characters who are people of color, but ultimately it is a predominantly white cast. And I think that in some ways, this is what Janine Georgia was trying to do is like, let's be like Gilmore Girls, let's do Oppression Olympics and let's be as diverse as we can be and try to hit every single plot line that Gilmore Girls tried to shun of the world from, because life is real and STDs are real. Like, you know what I mean? Like it kind of, and not that, you know, we need to course correct a show that aired 20 something years ago. That's why we have new shows now that can help right those wrongs. But yeah, I think that in looking back on this, there's a lot in that sense of how some of the characters were written and the people, you know, the predominantly white cast were people I think would reconsider. But at the same time, this does do a lot of work about, you know, looking at white privilege. It doesn't talk about it outright. But the fact of the matter is like Lorelai is a great example of that. And just someone who, while she made this big deal about striking out on her own when she was 16 and working her way up, ultimately she does have a nest, whether, you know, she likes to admit it or not. And I think that's for me as an adult watching this, like, while I know these days it's very common if your parents do have some sort of money that they would help an adult child with something, like it happens because of this terrible economy and like the head start people just don't have. It is interesting to see how like begrudgingly she's just like, ugh, my terrible parents, I have to go have dinner with them every week. However will I get over this? But yeah, it's just there's a lot that I love about this show. And then there's so much that after a while, I find that I have to turn off after a few episodes because I just get so frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets in your head. Like, I feel like this is a show, if you watch it, you can end up sort of speaking like it and picking up on the dialect. But it's interesting that you say this because I was wondering, would this show have worked if Lorelai had not been a young mom?
Like, if she was whatever, like in her 40s and asking her parents for money?
Yeah, like so for – or not just that, but also like I think that when I watched that show, I had no clue that she was supposed to be 32 years old.
Right. You know, we're like, all, I'm older than her now.
Same.
Right? Same. I watched it and was like, yeah, she's like a mom age. Like, I never really could fully, I think, comprehend, like, oh, she was a 16-year-old with a baby. Like, that's yeah. because, like, I think, I don't know that I totally understood the concept at that point, because I wasn't even 16, of, like, what being a teen parent would be like.
Yeah. It also predates 16 and pregnant, or, you know, if you ever watched Kristen Dunst's 15 and Pregnant on Lifetime, and I mean, that movie scared the shit out of me. But oh, yeah. but this show predates all of that stuff, or at least predates my exposure to that Kristen Dunst movie, because I feel like they aired it more when 16 and Pregnant comes on. So how would you, as like a 12 or 13-year-old, even begin to like wrap your mind around like, oh, yes. somebody that's 3 or 4 years older than me can have a baby and like be a parent at my age or at an age that is not far off from my own? So I remember her being like a young mom, but truly shocking to like look it up years later and be like, she's 32. I'm like, she's what now? She's how old?
And I think that, you know, here's my thought process around why they made her 32. I think they made her 32 so she could still be hot.
Of course. Oh, you can hear the WB yep. exec now yeah. being like, well, you know, she can't be like too young because that's weird, but she also can't be like completely unfuckable. So we got to go like early 30s because it's almost close to 20s, which we all yes. know that after a woman turns 32, she passes away. So you're listening to ghosts currently.
This is such a common theme with all of these shows, which is the actors cast, even when it wasn't a teen pregnancy situation, the actors cast or the parents are oftentimes 10 years older than the actors playing the teenagers. Like, I think back to the OC and Marissa's mom, I forget the actress, but she was only like 31, 32 playing the mother of a teenager. And it's, you know, that's just such a common pattern. I think the dynamic of the friends, are they mother, daughter, or are they best friends, doesn't work if Lorelai isn't a teen mom. That like the being yes. close in age and having the pop culture references and still being like, oh, we borrow each other's clothes. Oh, we borrow each other's lip glosses. And like, that's where I think it works. The dynamic works for Gilmore Girls. And I don't think it would work if she were older.
Well, yeah, they wanted, I mean, the theme that they hammer home is them like growing up together and seeing Rory, aka Lorelai Jr., kind of like take a very different path than her own mother, but both of their paths end up where they're supposed to be, etc. But I do think that like them, who's raising who, I think is like a big thing that they like to play upon as well. Like, I mean, to Meredith's point earlier about like, everybody's down here and like Rory's way up here. Like everybody's a fucking loser compared to Rory. I'm like, how does everybody like not just like kill themselves in this town? Because like if you're not Rory, then like what are you even doing with your life? Like even Sookie, who's like a great chef, although in the pilot they make her like so comically clumsy, like to the point where you're like, there is literally no way that this would be happening in like real reality. I'm glad that they toned it down.
You should celebrate yourself every day. But some days, you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
As time went on, but like even Sookie, she's just like, oh, all hail like Queen Rory. It's just sometimes it's like more, I think I feel like it's louder now, but when you're a teen, you're like, yeah, you should listen to me because like I'm smart and I have better ideas and you're old and on the way out.
I love that. That's so true. I mean, you have to give them credit. They were really writing this show for people at that development stage in their mm-hmm. lives, right? So that's brilliant. But there is something I think so aesthetically pleasing about this show, and there you add in the pop culture references that you actually end up attracting a little bit of an additional audience. Like Margot and I were saying, like my mom was not 13, but she was like enjoying this show. And why is that? Because there was just enough, I think, coded for a different generation.
Yeah, it was sort of very Toy Story-esque in a way, because I feel like Toy Story was like one of the first movies I remember my mom being like, wow, they thought about not just you guys, so I can watch this and not be like, this sounds like absolute, it doesn't mean anything to my ears when I hear it. And I think that Gilmore Girls did a great job of writing, splitting the difference a little bit and trying to make it appealing, because I think they saw the appeal in mothers and daughters watching it together, and also like girlfriends watching it together at like a slumber party. And there's, I think the funny thing about this show is that it does in a lot of way, like it's that coziness that you want, like in the fall, and you know that it has problems. It's like sort of like family. It's like, you know, it has problems, but you remember it through like this very like Vaseline lens. You're like, how bad could it be? And then you get six episodes in, you're like, never mind. I got to turn this off before I lose my mind.
You guys, we just talked a lot about Lorelai and Rory's relationship and dynamic. I want to bring it to the other mother-daughter relationship that this show kind of quietly brings into play more and more, which is the dynamic between Emily and Lorelai. In rewatching episodes, what feels realistic and unrealistic about the portrayal of that relationship through its good points and bad points?
I mean, I think there's a lot of things that the show got right about that relationship. Like, there's a lot of subtle judgment. There's a lot of tension. I can see it from both perspectives of people. That's what's so interesting, is like neither one of them is coded as all bad or all good. Like, they both made really, I think they both made choices that were hurtful for one another. Now, I would argue that Emily Gilmore is worse because she was the parent and the adult and made choices or tried to force choices that were not okay onto Lorelai. But at the same time, Lorelai becomes an adult and then sort of takes back that power by like withholding information, or, you know, I don't know. So it's yeah. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I think one of the things for me is that I think the tumultuousness and the nuance between mothers and daughters almost gets played out in some ways more realistically with Emily and Lorelai, because while Lorelai and Rory have moments where they don't get along and aren't speaking, I think it's a very different dynamic than and one that requires the barrier to entry of being that Lorelai was a child essentially when she gave birth to Rory, whereas Emily was an adult woman when she gave birth to Lorelai. And I think in many ways, the relationship there becomes more realistic. What's interesting and what I love about this show in many ways is you start out by thinking Emily is this mean character. And yes, when Lorelai was 16, she did some pretty terrible things to her daughter. But over time, you get to learn the context and the background of Emily's character, why she is the way she is, the choices she's made, and why she and the way she reacts like to these things and her pride and that kind of thing, that she becomes to me one of the most interesting characters on the show.
I think their dynamic is the most fascinating and rich to look at separately apart from the show. I feel like it's its own Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, like drama unfolding and happening subtly. And I just want to echo how much more realistic their relationship I feel like is, and like almost relatable as well in some ways too, about how eventually you have to see your parents as just people. And I don't really know if we get that lesson necessarily between Rory and Lorelai, but we do get it between Lorelai and Emily. And I think that that's the most valuable adult human lesson you could take from like a show. And I just think that they do such a good job with their whole dynamic. From moment one, you can just tell there is 10, 15, 20 years of unspoken resentment between the two of them. And it's truly like a 3-minute conversation that they have where Lorelai just agrees to like come to dinner once a week if they'll help with Rory's tuition. But you can just feel how much tension there is in that room. And I think that's like a huge tribute to both like Lauren Graham and I forget the actress who plays Emily's
Kelly name. Bishop.
Yeah. I just think that they also have incredible chemistry together.
I agree with that. I think that Kelly Bishop is a really talented actor as well. And I also think there is an interesting dynamic between Rory and Emily in that I, of course, like Lorelai loves Rory, but sometimes it does feel a little conditional. Mm-hmm. And Emily loves Rory like in a way that's like problematically unconditional. Like Rory could like commit murder and her grandparents would have been like, well, kiddo, you made a mistake. Like, and I do think that's reminiscent of, I didn't have that relationship with a grandparent, but I do think that's reminiscent of how a lot of people have relationships with grandparents. Maybe unconditional isn't the right word, but like they basically look the other way at like all her shitty qualities.
Yeah. The last episodes where it's like she quits Yale and goes and joins the DAR with her like grand, it's just the weirdest, and they're fully supportive and yeah.
I mean, I think it's they just see Rory as their do-over, and everything that they got wrong with Lorelai, they can then now try to correct with Rory. And, you know, my mom and her mom did not have a close relationship, but me and my grandma were very close. And so I see a lot of like reflection in like, I just think that, you know, the more you think you're different, the more the same you are with, and a lot of people share the same story. And so I always found those relationship dynamics to be really interesting. And I think that they really just, especially Emily, put all of her hopes and dreams on Rory to carry this family because she knew she could take the pressure. And I don't think that she trusts Lorelai to be that responsible and shoulder the pressure as well. And all three of them know that, but they never say it to each other. Again, just like perfect chef's kiss of mother, daughter, grandmother relationships.
We talked about the familial relationships and we briefly talked about Dean, but I want to go back to the boyfriends. So there's the three main ones. There's Dean, there's Jess, and there's Logan. I'd love to know what team are you on? And you can be team none of these men. That's a very viable option. Let's just talk a little bit about these men. Would anyone like to start?
Margo, do you want to start?
I feel like team is like such a strong word to be using.
I know.
But I would say I'm not team no one. I mean, I think he's bad, but you know, I've had a crush on Milo Ventimiglia for so long, and it's because of Jess. And so, unfortunately, I'm going to have to say team Jess, like, reluctantly and, like, with an asterisk. Like, I stand no man, and I need everyone to know that. Like, I would not defend him, but, like, if I had to pick, it's got to be my guy. Dean is a sweet little himbo, but, like, they have nothing in common, and I never liked Logan.
How about you, Meredith?
Curse the day Logan was born. I cannot stand Logan. I think that's when the show jumped the shark is when they brought Logan in because it took away from like Rory being divided from like the fanciness because even though Paris was like really wealthy and like, you know, obviously had like a lot of connections, she was such a weirdo that it didn't matter, right? Like it didn't, and totally. I mean that totally. In a really loving way. Like she totally. Was too neurotic. To have it be like, oh, well, Paris like could have gotten invited to all the same stuff that Logan was getting invited to. But she was like too unhinged to care. So as soon as we took away that barrier, Rory became too enmeshed in her grandparents' world, which is like exactly everything that Lorelai rejected. And like it was gone. So I can't stand Logan. Dean, I don't know where he was on January 6th. That's what I'll say about that. Okay.
I mean, yeah.
Okay. Dean, like, remember the episode where he like makes Rory do like be almost like June Cleaver?
Yes. 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 Cause he's like, oh, it's nice to have a woman cook for you and stuff. And so she dresses up like June Cleaver and they have like a night together. It's I agree with you. I mean, like, I think all the above, like, where was he on January 6th? You know, what webs, what Reddit threads is he subscribed to? You know, like, all the above.
Is he in the same men's rights group Reddit threads as Cody Brown? We don't know.
Okay, here's what I would say, though. Dean is so dumb. I don't think that he – and listen, I don't mean to, like – I'm not smart at everything, but, like, do you really think that he would be able to be on a computer in a way that would allow him to, like, figure out Reddit? He would be on Facebook.
Yes.
And he would have, like, an American flag profile picture, and it would be like,
yep,
my pronouns are God bless America, which I love when people say that, because I'm always like, okay, so, like, that's what you want me to call you?
Yeah.
But
God.
I think that God bless America is over there. But I, so yes, I would also say Team Jess. And I was looking through, like, a little bit of, doing a little bit of research on this. And one of the, like, we have to admit, Jess comes back into Rory's life and he's an upgraded version of Jess.
Yes, absolutely.
So I love that. But I was reading, like, how what ends it between him and Rory in the beginning is because he's, like, pressuring her to have sex. And I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. Like, that's that. I don't think they would do that now. I don't think they would, like,
no,
do a plot line of pressuring for sex. And then Dean breaks it up because, of course, like, the man has to save the day. So, yeah, I'm also going to reluctantly say Team Jess.
Yeah.
She needed, like, another boyfriend on that show. Like, they really, yeah, that was, that's your holy trinity.
I know.
What about you?
No, they're all terrible to a certain degree, but yeah, the lesser of all, the least of all evils is Jess in this case. And while I think what I appreciate about the Jess character is there is that showing, you see the growth in that character over time. Whereas Dean becomes the friend over time, and that's nice in its own way. I think that Jess's character grows up over time. I also wonder if, like, the portrayal would have been different had, I think some of you may know this, like, one of the season finales is a backdoor plot episode to what was supposed to be a spinoff for Jess's character, like, spending time with his dad and his new family in California. And it didn't get picked up. So there is that, like, first time that Jess exits the show is because they were trying to set this up and it didn't get picked up by the WB or CW maybe at that point. But anyway, like, yeah, I know. It was one of those things that I remember reading about. But yeah.
Was it an Amy Sherman Palladino show? Like,
it would have been an Amy Sherman. Yeah. So it's like this. I think it was, and it's like you meet the you get to meet Jess's dad, or we've met Jess's dad already, but he goes and lives with his dad in California, and his new wife is played by Sherilyn Fenn, like Audrey from Twin Peaks, and he has, like, a stepsister, and yeah, the show didn't get picked up, but yeah, there's this whole episode of Gilmore Girls. I think it's one of, like, it's either season 3 or season 4 finale, I think, where Jess goes to California, and that served as was supposed to serve as a backdoor plot to a new spinoff show that they were going to do that ultimately didn't get picked up. Fascinating.
They were like, we already have the OC.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it just, I think this was the W, I think this was supposed to be the WB's foray into the California shows of the time, but it didn't work out. But yeah, I think that's, Jess is afforded the ability to grow on that show, which I appreciate. And I think, like, realistically, he's the only one who tends to call Rory out on her bullshit, which I really appreciate. Mm-hmm. Like, when she drops out of Yale, he's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, and that is, for me, the one voice of reason in the room is Jess. And so I think that's why I do not, there are things he does that are terrible throughout the show. Ultimately, I think he is the best of all the boyfriends.
Typical men that it's like all three of the selections suck.
Like, I know.
In a show where there's, like, so many cool women, right? Like, yeah. And I wouldn't even totally put Rory in that grouping, but, like, you know, there's Miss Patty.
Yeah. Like, Lane's in there. Lane's cool.
Yes. I would even put Emily in there.
Yeah. She's got stories, I'm sure.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Totally. But yeah, I agree.
It's like three lame men and a bunch of cool women is going to be the title of my memoir. Like, it's just, like, it's so true to life all the time. And it's true to Gilmore Girls.
The only interesting men on that show are the town eccentrics. So it's like Kirk and Taylor.
Oh, Kirk.
Like these are the most interesting, and Michelle, like these are the most interesting men on the show. Cause like Luke just gets so annoying and curmudgeon-y for a while. I'm just like, okay, we get it. You're pissed. You're angry. You don't want cell phones in your diner. Okay, goodbye. Like, and you're still in love with Lorelai, but that character just becomes such a one trick pony. And like, my frustration with Gilmore Girls is the whole show would be 2 seconds long if people didn't keep secrets from one another. That is the entire show in a nutshell. It's just people keeping secrets from one another and what happens as a result of that. And Luke is no exception to that. So ultimately, to me, the most interesting male characters on that show are almost always like C-plot, D-plot male characters in the town.
Well, I
okay,
love that.
Hugo.
I just love that Michelle, that they coded as gay, is that was like back in a time when like if you were coded as gay, you were just like French, which I had completely forgotten about that trope. So that's always a fun reminder. But Meredith, I was going to ask you what you thought about Luke, because I kind of had a soft spot for his curmudgeon-y behavior. Watching it like when it aired in real time, but then in going back to it, I was like, why is he so mean and rude constantly? It's just sort of the shtick wears thin. Faster currently than it did at the time. But I'd be curious to know what you think about Luke and his behavior.
I think Luke is smart enough to figure out how to get onto the Reddit message boards. That's what I'd say.
Are you also asking where he was on January 6th? Yes,
love it. He's got the flannel to prove it.
And he drives a truck. So
here's the thing. I like Luke because I think he has a heart of gold.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I can kind of go with anybody who has a heart of gold. And I think he's a hard worker. He really does love Lorelai with all her flaws. And to be honest with you, she like kind of dicks him around. And he puts up with
it. Totally. So yes. Totally.
Even though I do think like now I think it would wear really thin of like the angry, annoyed white guy who runs the diner. But at the same time, having a, you know, small business in any economy isn't easy.
Seriously. Well, I mean, restaurants closing left and right. You got to like put your foot down somewhere, I suppose, if you want to be a long lasting institution.
So here's my question for both of you. If you could give a spinoff, if you could have a backdoor plot for someone on Gilmore Girls, who would it be? And like, what would the plot be?
Young Emily. That's what I would want. It would be about Emily before she gets married, like just her life leading up to when she meets her husband. And I would just love to see a Young Emily spinoff. I think that would be great. She's such a fascinating character. And then we could even go back and see what Emily's relationship with her mother was like, because I can't imagine that wasn't not fraught. You don't just like suddenly treat your – she had this modeled for her is what I'm trying to say. So I'd be very curious to see all of that. And just, I don't know, I kind of imagine it to be a little bit like she sees a lot of Rory in herself, so I imagine she's got some of those qualities, but maybe I would love to see her try to be like a debutante. I just find her to be so endlessly fascinating. So that a Young Emily spinoff is my choice. Em?
Oh, yeah, this is so good. For me, it's that Lane leaves Stars Hollow and goes, and, you know, with a band somewhere else. And it's her life with, you know, moving to New York or somewhere else and like really living this rich life as a musician. How about you, Meredith?
Yeah, I think it could be really interesting for about a show about young Michelle.
Oh, yes. Oh,
yes.
Right?
He's in
almost
France.
Almost like a young Sheldon. Right. He's in France. He's growing up. He's learning. Like he's just – and then he comes to the U.S. and he's like absolutely horrified. Like just what it's like, and he ends up in this podunk Connecticut town, and I don't know, I could have done more on him. Or, you know, Taylor honestly would also be kind of interesting.
Okay,
like, what was Taylor like as a 20 year old,
which I can't imagine. I just think he was born 45 or 50. That's like true. It's just
so basically I think we just take off the leads and we just do a show.
We make everybody younger. And then We explore like the three converging plot lines coming to Stars Hollow and how they all ended up there. I'm in. I'm down. Love that.
I'm so on board. We are going to end things pretty soon, but I just wanted to ask you two final questions. So one of them is just about the revival. Did you guys watch it? And do you have any thoughts about it?
I did watch it. I thought it was fine. I didn't think it was the worst. Like, here's the thing. I talked to my sister about this the other day. I was like, what is a show that you love so much you'd love to have a revival of? And I've had a couple shows do that, like Arrested Development, and it's like never as good. And so I just think that, like, I actually think the Gilmore Girls one was not as bad as a lot of these revival shows have been. So, like, credit where credit's due. I didn't think it was terrible. And it only solidified to me that, like, Rory is just such a pain in the ass. And this show will never have a conversation about, you know, women's reproductive rights. like you do have an option, girl.
How about you, Margot?
I didn't watch it because everybody scared me off by how terrible it was. Everybody I knew that loved Gilmore Girls when we were younger absolutely panned it, had not one nice thing to say about it. And when I did put it on, like on a plane or something, I either fell asleep or got distracted on my phone because, like, it was like maybe 5 or 10 minutes. And I was like, you know what? Maybe some other time when I'm more in the mood. And I never came back to it. So, yeah. Watch it. Emily, did you watch it?
I did watch it. And I felt like you, Meredith, you know, it wasn't my favorite thing in the world. I do think it solidified my dislike for Rory Gilmore. But there are far worse revivals, including Arrested Development. There's just so many. I mean, it came out during a time where every other network TV show of the last 30 years was getting a revival, because this was like Will and Grace, Murphy Brown, like every left and right, everybody was getting a revival. And so it just felt like in me at the time, I appreciate what I do appreciate about it is it packaged it into 4 episodes and it didn't try to bring it back with several seasons. And I think in some ways it saves face, even with the things that are not great about it. It saves a lot of face by having packaged itself up in this nice, neat way. That being said, if they ever try to revisit Gilmore Girls again, I don't know. it taints the brand a bit more for me.
Fair enough.
So the last thing I want to ask you both is, why is this show still so popular almost 25 years later? It aired in October of 2000. We're talking 23 years later about Gilmore Girls.
Such a good question. And I think that relationships, even though so much has changed, like a lot of the things that we see in relationships on that show have stayed the same. And so you see some really interesting dynamic family relationships playing out. And I think those are things that draw people in, right? People see themselves, like we all saw ourselves in some of these characters, right? Me, mostly Kirk. But like, I think that's what it is. And I also think, and this is like not to get up on my soapbox, like we're just not making shows like we used to, right? Like, and this has to do, you know, we are still in the midst of a strike and we just finished the WGA strike. So it's like, I don't think that we are cranking out shows like this anymore that are of this quality. Like you mentioned Mad Men. I have not watched anything as good as Mad Men in years. So I think that's part of it.
Yeah, looking at 22 episodes, I don't know why I'm like, I forget that we had like full arcs, that things don't get like wrapped up in like 6 episodes and it feels unsatisfying. I think the quality of storytelling, it is timeless, even if we did feel like there were some things that were maybe outdated or wouldn't necessarily play as well or as naturally in 2023. And I also think that, especially after the pandemic, how unpredictable and scary everything always feels all of the time, not to, you know, speak in broad stroke terminology about the news. But I think that people really crave a predictability, a security, something that you know is going to make you laugh, isn't going to challenge you. Not like there's anything wrong with something that doesn't challenge you. You just want to, you want to know what you're getting, and you know what you're getting into when you're going to Stars Hollow. And I think that that's why this show is like such an enduring classic, even if, you know, after if you binge watch it, you kind of feel a little bit crazy. So like, I think that that's sort of part of the charm of it. And I also think the caliber of acting and writing and directing and set deck, all of that, you just don't get that level of quality, to Meredith's point, of just like of it being, it's like a show that, you know, everybody who worked on it really deeply cared about it.
Yeah. I think it's it also represents a show that works for different viewers of different generations. I think that you see that more in film. You brought up Toy Story earlier, and it's true. Like, Pixar has done this really well. I think kids movies in general, like the gen, I think Disney and a couple of other studios are doing a really good job of creating content out there that isn't just meant for kids, but can be enjoyed by parents and has like a good plot line. But in terms of like teen TV shows, you just, to that, you don't have that level of quality, but you also just don't have shows. They're very much meant, it feels like, for two different audiences. It's either the teenagers, or it's a show that's meant for adults to think that they're watching something realistic about teenagers that is not realistic at all. And I don't think those two audiences get married or get to be in the same room often anymore.
Yeah, that's so true. Because I think that executives really don't view viewers as like having personalities or preferences. They just view you as like, oh, you're either going to like it or you're not. You're either going to love Euphoria because it's all about drugs, and that's what the kids do. It's like, I have only been offered hard drugs twice. Okay, you guys, I'm not that cool.
Yeah, it's like the closest we get to like monoculture of what people are watching is like literally The Bear, you know? And I don't really know anybody that like can deeply relate and or, well, not deeply relate, because the episode where all of the machine goes insane and it spits out a bunch of receipts sent my husband into like a PTSD like trauma from work. But like, it's not a show that you can relax into, right? Like, it doesn't feel good. Like, I don't want to get yelled at by Joel McHale. Like, so I don't really know what we've got to do here.
But that's like a kink, so.
Yeah, I'm sure like someone wants it, but I'm too fragile right now to take it. So they get
it's fair enough.
It's not a comfort show, is what
no,
you know.
Yeah. No, yeah. No. But to Meredith's point, it's like execs just see you as an algorithm or like a number or whatever, or someone that they're trying to market to. And so they don't really see the value in like everybody has such individualistic tastes, because you don't have to listen to or watch anything you don't want to, because you can just watch something else on your phone or on your laptop or whatever. And I think that that's great. But also, they're not speaking to people in a blended family situation anymore, because they don't have to, because everybody's watching something else. So you either get like a adult's idea of what high school is like right now, or you get Paw Patrol, and like there is no in between. You know, we're not doing Paw Patrol comes to Euphoria, like, although that would be really funny.
It's spoiler alert, they're the drug sniffing dogs. Like,
I knew it. The ACAB, those friggin' little dogs.
Oh my God. This has been such a fun conversation.
We had a great time.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining us, Meredith. We cannot say enough good things. Meredith, we love to do this with our guests on our show. If you have anything you'd like to plug, like, feel free to share with our audience.
Yeah, thank you. So I am Meredith M. Lynch on Instagram and TikTok. You can find me there. I also have a Patreon. And if you're in the LA area, November 29th, I am performing at The Crow in Santa Monica. So I'd love to see you there. I'm going to do a whole set on Rachel Zoe. So I know everyone's been waiting for that.
Oh, man. We've never done the Zoe report on this show, Margo. We should talk about it.
Yeah, we'll have you back on for that.
Oh, she's very litigious.
Oh no.
No. Now I talk so much shit about her. She did try to sue me.
That's a fun little about me for your LinkedIn.
Yeah. So now we're turning lemons into lemonade, and I'm working on a set about it, which it's coming together.
Well, please, LA listeners, if you are around on the 29th, go check out Meredith's show. I would certainly love to be able to do that. So we'll definitely have to make sure next time you have a show in LA, like maybe we'll our paths will collide and Margo and I will happen to be in town.
Love
since we're
that.
Just in the Bay Area, right? Not too far away.
Would love it. It's a woman-owned comedy club and focus on women and queer and people of color are the main performers. So, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This was such a blast. It was so good to talk about Gilmore Girls. I feel a weight has been lifted.
I know. I know. We all processed it together. And mm-hmm. now take a deep breath. Release. We want to thank everyone for joining us again on our show. As always, you can find us wherever you stream podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever some of these – everyone's getting acquired these days. So some of the podcast platforms we've talked about before no longer exist. But really, wherever you listen to a podcast, you can find us. And while you're there, if you happen to have a way to leave a rating and review, we always appreciate those. And we love hearing from all of you, all the great feedback. You can also find us on social media at The Old Millennials Pod on Instagram and Facebook. And until next time, we say bye-bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.